Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we talk about how to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. And now, here's your host, Stephen Libman, managing partner of Integrity Holdings Group.
Welcome back to the Free From Wall Street podcast. My name is Steve Libman, and I am the managing partner of Integrity Holdings Group and also your host for the Free From Wall Street podcast. I'm with Tom Mullen today, good friend of mine, mentor, also the brother-in-law of my business partner. Thanks for being here, man.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Yeah. So, of course, we've spent an hour and a half before the call to talk about everything else in life that's going on, but we are mid-smack of May 12th, still COVID, lockdown, quarantine, but not you guys, right? You guys are still working and grinding.
We're still grinding away. Like we were kind of catching up with, like we talked about before, is the new, I guess, what you would refer to it. And operating through this whole thing has been a challenge, to say the least.
Yeah, so tell the listeners what it is that you do. What's your company? So then we could dig into all the operational changes that you've had to make, which are crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, North America Pipeline is a company that performs, it mainly started out in 1972 about doing CCTV and pipe cleaning operations pretty much all over the state of New Jersey. Localized company, only had about three or four guys.
And so you guys are putting cameras into pipes and seeing if something's broken, rusted, busted, whatever.
Yep. We usually go in and clean them out and, we go in with a robotic camera and do a full assessment. And that usually goes back to the customer, which in most cases are townships looking at their lines and their conditions. And at that point, they usually go back and go to the drawing board and see what problems they need to address now or what they're not going to address. And originally, the company was just a one-line industry a company that just did that. They did not give any rehabilitation or any repair options to the customer.
They just showed people what was wrong.
That's it. They were an assessment kind of company and just did, for any pipe, it could be for storm drain, no water mains or anything, but, storm drains and active sewers. So that was one thing that the owner of the company was actually good friends with my father, who's taught me everything I know and was also in the construction business, in the underground sewer business. And, I was kind of always in his ear, like, listen, he would always call my father to either, pawn him off to us to go do the fix or give it to his competitor at the time. And I'm like, you're crazy you're only doing a quarter of what you're capable of doing. And he was fine with it. That was just his thing. That's just what he did. And that was good for him. So years later, after my stint with real estate development, after I left my father, I was actually speaking with him and he was getting ready to retire. And so at that point, we just asked him, I'm really interested in doing this. Can you make it happen? And he did. So I went to at the time, it was my employer for Renaissance Properties. And they got behind me and we put the deal together. He held the note, let me work through the whole thing. And now it is 2020, when we started with three guys and now we're up to over 55 people. So, now we provide a full service. Now we're doing those things that I had those discussions with them in the past was provide this service. And that's what has made us grow is we offer the customers options. It's a one call service. So when we get called out to go look and assess your pipes, and there's usually something that's wrong with it because usually we're not called in just to say,
everything good.
There's usually something happening. So it's been a great thing for both parties on either end and for us to supply an option of having it repaired and having that trust too and that relationship already going, which makes us very competitive because we have that inside track, I guess. And the customer doesn't lose time too, because usually dealing with sewers, a lot of gravity sewers,
a little time sensitive.
Yes, it's time sensitive. Right. So that's also another.
So, So you've taken over and you've gone from just assessing the issue to now assessing the issue, providing the solution. Correct me if I'm wrong. You now offer a proprietary product to do like slip lining of these and with a, tell us a little bit about that, because I know that you used to have to dig up these pipes, right? Open up the roads and replace the pipe. And now there's some instances where maybe you don't have to do that.
Right. So actually, when I bought North American, me and the partners, my partners now, we had a very small excavation company, which is, like I said before, that's where my background came from. So that is usually the typical procedure, right? You have a problem and you need to dig and go get that pipe and go fix it. So the technology has actually been around for a while, the trenchless technology. You know, it's been in Europe, you know, forever, originated there. It's been a lot of out in the West Coast. It's always been popular as far as, you know, trenchless and rehabilitation. So it's a very tough industry to get into because it's, you got to have experienced people behind you, and there's no schools for it really, at least years back. So the way we kind of got into it was, there was an opportunity where I was working for, I was actually serving one of our customers up in North Jersey, and they were a lining company. So the process is when these pipes have to be rehabilitated trenchlessly, we invert it's almost like a sock, if you would, that's impregnated with resins. I mean, there's two processes, one steam and one is water cured. So we pretty much shoot that bag, if you will, through, you know, from manhole to manhole once it's cleaned and prepped. And once that's done and it's cooked, as they say in the industry, and cured, then we have robotic cameras that will come out, come through the pipes and reinstate the services, all while people are home. So people are driving down the street while we're doing this, and the whole thing. It's just an amazing process. And pretty much now starting your clock over of, you've got a new pipe inside an old pipe. So it's,
how long does that last?
I mean, it's good for, it depends on what the usage is. And obviously, you know, the capacity that's flowing through it, but mainly it's almost pretty much the life of PVC, which is usually what is installed today in new installations, which is, you know, 40 years. So, wow. You know, it's, you're kind of getting that a new system.
Yeah.
You know, when we had this meeting to just do the cleaning for this company up in North Jersey, we were just sitting at a table and the general manager goes, you know, I have a guy that's would be totally perfect for you. You know, he's just could be the guy that you want. We utilize him all the time and he does a lot of trenchless repairs. And his name was Bill Jones. And he had, you know, he's got 30 plus years in the industry. Everybody knows him. So we wound up, it was the weirdest thing. We wound up hooking up with him there and they called him into the office and they kind of gave him to us. You know, they were like, listen, they can, he can benefit you guys. This is what you're looking to do. And it was just meant to be.
Amazing.
It was amazing. And he got us connected to another company that was going out of business, which he used to work for. And it was a timing thing. We went in and bought all the equipment, which is, you know, the equipment in the industry is a one-off, you know, it's very expensive equipment. And they were just getting ready to leave the business. So we wound up purchasing all of it, some of it at auction and some of it just between us. And then boom, we were in the rehab game doing trenchless repairs and offering this new service. And things were going really good. And now we started doing more work for the company that introduced us in the first place, because they were a lining company. And that's all they did is they just put their liners in. But there's always, you know, spot repairs and grouting and all this, these other types of trenchless technologies that was in his wheelhouse. And fast forward about 3 or 4 years forward from that, I went up buying that company, which did the liners. We would, you know, Knapp would bid on the job and hire them as a sub to install the bigger liners. So it just worked out timing wise. A bigger company came in and bought it was more of an environmental company, but they had a lining division and we just went in. It was, again, just everything lined up and we put this deal together to bring in the lining. So now we're full service before you know it. And now we're, you know, 55 plus people, like I said, and giving our customers a full service, whether it be excavation, because there's no one shoe fits all, or, you know, one size fits all.
Sure.
Because it just depends on the location and the severity, because not everything can be lined. Some things just have to be excavated, and some things just need to be spot repaired, and some things need to be replaced in its entirety. So
I'm going to back you up for a second. So going from excavating services, okay, we're going to buy this company that I've been whispering in this guy's ear for years about and saying, okay, this is how we're going to maybe expand and take over the company. You expand with the services that you already knew. Acquisition, second acquisition, now serving full service providers to townships across the country or across the state, right? Big
yeah,
townships
tri-state.
Across the state.
Yeah.
And my big takeaway from everything that you just mentioned was two things. One, the timing just worked out. And I hear this from entrepreneurs all the time, right? I think it's because partially we don't want to admit that we did anything to get us ourselves here.
Right.
Like, yes, timing needs to work out for these things to happen. But I think what that timing is predicated on is the relationships, right? The relationships of your partners, the relationships of you, your dad, walking slowly through the halls, really listening to different mentors, having your own ideas, but leaning on those guys to come in. This guy, Bill Jones, who comes in, now he's got relationships. I mean, in almost any business, I mean, we're in very different businesses, but the only thing that I can lean on that says I am successful because I'm where I am today has just been all of those relationships. And it sounds like very similar experience.
Yeah. There's nothing that's going to propel you. Like we were just talking about, you know, it's stepped up, you know, my stepbrother, Travis, you know, being your partner. You can't do these things alone. You just can't. And if you think that you can, you're really going to put the roof on your head quick. When I first started, like I said, I had the smaller company. You know, I started that company with just pretty much three employees. And, you know, my guy, Justin Bucanigo, who was that excavating division, we started that company. You know, we were dreaming then of we're going to be a big excavation company. We're going to take this thing. And we were doing snow plowing at the time. I mean, we were doing, little dig jobs, but whatever it was to make money so that we can go to that next step, that's what we did. And then when I bought Knapp, he was like, what do you mean you're buying a trenchless company? We dig trenches. So I was like, you know, just trust me, it's going to work. We have to provide the services. We're going to be this one call. I'm telling you, it's just going to work. And he was always all in too. And then when I bought Knapp, it's a funny story because I worked on the real estate development side with my now partners. And I've been with them for 18 years in the real estate business, developing commercial and residential properties, a company that did all of our clearing that I hired throughout the years. There was a guy, Paul Kocher, who worked in these companies. And all the companies that he's ever worked for, I always thought that when I first met him, I thought he owned the company. And he just had that attitude. You know, he did everything from estimating to working to running the machines out there. And finally, you know, we were just even bill out. I mean, he'd send the bill in and the next day he's looking to pick up a check. And the whole time I thought he was getting commission or he's an owner. Winds up, he was just the head guy that was just doing it for the owner. And he just treated things like his own. And it just always impressed me. We started getting along. We had for 18 years. I mean, he cleared everything I had, you know, for years. And when I bought Knapp, he was kind of getting run down a little bit in his company because he never got a Christmas bonus. I mean, he did what he had to do and wore it on his shoulder and built companies. I've seen him build companies just from ground up with his contacts and his work ethic and this and that. Yeah.
Just going above and beyond,
just outworking people. And next thing you know, I put this deal together with Knapp and I'm like, you know, I need a guy like you, but I can't afford to pay a guy like you. He has a wife and kids. And in every entrepreneur's journey, you know, stuff that you read, you know, your first hire and making that decision to hire somebody, very, very tough.
Terrifying.
Because you're used to doing everything on your own.
Right.
You know, and answering to no one. And now you're taking somebody in on the ride. and buying in to what you want to do. And
at a huge cost.
Huge cost.
You know, and in hindsight, if you make it, you can always look back on it as the best investment you ever made. But usually that, I mean, we were flipping houses for 5 years before we hired our first person. And I remember the terror. It was like, right. I don't know if we can do this. They're going to rely on us for a paycheck, or, you know, yeah. And you went through the same thing. It's scary.
It's a commitment.
I mean, now you 60 employees later, you obviously have outgrown that fear.
Right. It's a different fear.
But it's a different fear, but you do have to outgrow it. And
right.
That's what I want the listeners to hear too, is you can overcome that.
Right.
But that first one, don't feel like anybody is exempt from this fear, regardless of the size of the company or how many millions of dollars they're doing now.
Right.
Somebody at some point had to make a decision that they needed help and they probably couldn't afford them at the time. Right. I'd say almost everybody I know feels the same way.
Right. And entrepreneurs, like, comfort zone is a huge, huge, you're always out of your comfort zone. And that's what a good entrepreneur is. You got to be good at never being comfortable.
Yeah.
And I don't think you ever outgrow that.
Yeah. I have a podcast. We have Leif Babin coming on the podcast in the next couple of days. And he's a Silver Star decorated former Navy SEAL. And now he trains companies how to implement extreme ownership and warfare tactics into business. Wow. And this is what they talk about all the time. They're talking about, be comfortable being uncomfortable, right? And there is no such thing as a comfort zone. What I like about this theory or this practice is that it's true. You can practice your way into this. It is like a muscle that you can exercise. If you live in a safe zone all the time and you never take that leap out into your uncomfort zone, then, and you have no discomfort ever, then you won't work that out of yourself, right?
No.
Now, you and I, we talk a lot about this, and I'm sure Travis would agree. I don't even know what a comfort zone is anymore. I've been so far outside of my comfort zone for so long that that is now normal.
Your comfort, yeah.
Now it's my comfort. So I know that when I get a little bit comfortable, I got to go do something crazy. That's it. Because it's got to change.
You got to shake it up.
That's right.
And that's a hard thing to deal with, you know, because sometimes you just want to, you know, sometimes you probably do this to yourself. You just ask yourself, what are you doing now? You know, because you just, Can I get a minute? We just won this battle. Like, what are you going to run into this thing for, this burning house, you know?
Yeah. I've heard other entrepreneurs explain it as you're jumping on the helicopter to get evacuated from the war zone. And before you've even taken off, they turn around. They're like, you ready to go back in? Just give me a minute, man. Let me go home and lick my wounds for a second.
Right. Yep.
No, we don't get that opportunity as entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And you don't, you know, it's also on the other side because, you know, you're in that awkward position where you're doing your first hire, somebody that's coming aboard of what your dream is and what you're building and the vision that you have. And the case with Paul, he's coming into a position. He's been in the tree business, the arborist business forever, right? And now he's going completely 180 into the sewer service business.
Underground, literally.
Right. And you know, that was a nervous thing. I said, anything like this can be learned. What can't be learned is your perseverance, obviously your contacts. You know, I'm always the one, you know, I don't per se believe in salespeople. We don't have salespeople here. I have about 50 salespeople here because everyone is always, man, I hate to say it on the sell, but that's what it is. They're selling reputation and service and themselves as well as the company.
Well, and they know what it is that they offer, and they offer something that they believe in and they trust in. And that's what I think that's a big takeaway too. I mean, even for us, when we're offering opportunities to investors, I'm not selling anybody.
Right.
I'm just telling our story, and we're helping people create generational wealth through passive income investments. And some people will take us up on it. Some people won't.
Right.
But if you believe in what it is that you're doing, then everybody naturally becomes a salesperson because they're just telling the story. And that's what people want to hear, the story.
Right. And, you know, as an entrepreneur too, and knowing you guys as long as I have, because I've I really look at you guys and, you know, I'm so proud of the way you guys grew this thing. It's been impressive. But going back to those days, you know, meeting down in Atlantic City and just coming down to our municipal, you know, events and making connections for real estate stuff, just flinging stuff against a wall, which you guys were always doing, you know, yeah. Because listen, we've had how many conversations, like I'm talking back then, like, you know, about the oil and the fracking and oh, you yeah. know, I mean,
that's right.
you've guys, and there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, you can't, everyone has a goal and a vision as an entrepreneur. We were talking this earlier, like, I love the word pivot. It's in your bio. I use it all the time. Like, if you cannot pivot, you really should question your entrepreneurial dream, because you need to be able to do that at all times. Flexibility is everything, because, and you have to know, as much as you cliche a little bit, to be out of your comfort zone, you got to know when to pull back too. There's right. bravado and about it, but you know, you have to know enough to play out things and fail them before you fail them in your head and really run through things and play things out. And it's, you know, great that you have that relationship with Travis and your partner, that you guys do that. And you are not the same too. You're kind of right, opposites,
yeah.
which is the best mix ever, because you're looking at it from two different. And that's another thing that I always try to do. We have a pretty diversified group here. And we laugh about it all the time. And like I would say, you know, Paul came from the tree business,
right.
And he brought the revenue. So when I bought the company, the revenue was like $750,000 a year, and that was a 40-year-old business with clients right. that were 30 years, and that's all it was doing. It wasn't bonded. They didn't do any kind of, you know, he still had a good client list of about 1,300 people, but you know, a year later, he doubled gross sales on his own.
Wow.
And he just, he worked. I mean, he put hours in and he learned.
Well, that's the thing, right? You saw him yep. working hard at other people's jobs and businesses and stuff. And, you know, one right. thing that we've learned over the last decade is you hire for character, you train for skill.
Yeah.
And when you find people with integrity and character and a work ethic, and they believe in your vision and your mission, and they just want to be on the team, those are the yeah. people. Right. We can right. train anybody how to do most things in our businesses. I mean, we're not inventing anything new under the sun. Like, you're not the only guy in the world that knows how to do this. I'm right. not the only guy in the world that knows how to buy a multifamily house, but right. people will come and work for us because relationship. Right. So you right. hire for character, you hire for work ethic, and yeah, whether it's cutting down trees or slip line and sewer lines, if you're a hustler and you want yep. to work and you believe in what you're doing, then you're yep. going to win.
And all his customers transitioned. I mean, everyone he was cutting trees for the last 10 years, we're now lining for, because they were just all in the industry. So huh. he's still working with all the same people. And, you know, on that end, it's a great, you know, success story, how all those timing things happen and getting those people aboard and taking those chances. And vice versa, when you hire your first one, two, or three employees, you have to understand that they're probably just as scared as you, because yeah. they are not going to work for McDonald's, you know, something that just got started. That's a scary place for somebody that has a mortgage, yeah. bills to pay.
I have a buddy of mine who I remember years ago, he was working at a bigger company, and you know, I invited him in to project manage for us. And I said, you know, this is where we're going. This is what we're doing. And I don't blame him. Right?
Right.
But he was like, hey man, I'm working for this pretty big company, and I know that in 5 years, they're going to be around. And I love you, but I don't know where you guys are going to be in 5 years. And that was right. about 5 years ago. And I bet you he didn't envision that we bought $100 million worth of property, no. but I get right. I mean, yeah. there's certain people that are going to take the ride. And they're going to put the risk reward on the line. And there's other people that are not. They're going to go for more in the lines. I have a mortgage and a family to support, and that's where I'm going to live. Mm-hmm. And it takes all of those people to run successful companies and to build successful businesses. So right. I appreciate the people that won't take that risk. It's just not me, right?
Sure.
I knew I was unemployable by the time I was 22. I just could not work for anybody else.
Right.
And yeah, we did try a couple of different things. I mean, we wholesaled, we did some, we started that house raising company after Sandy to raise houses, and that was a miserable failure, but still a great idea, I think.
Yeah. But what a learning experience. I mean, you guys took away from that is
how to implement some different things and bootstrap a business. And, and yeah, it is all a learning curve. I think, you know, day by day, nothing changes, but as the years go by, everything is different.
Right.
No better can you see that than in the genesis of a business where it's like, hey, I started, I was afraid, I hired my first guy, and now we have, you know, $5 million in payroll and this, you know, this many trucks and this much inventory. And, you know, it just, you know, but today's struggle, tomorrow's struggle will look very similar. But 10 years ago, when you started everything, the struggle looked very different. So, you know, it's an amazing story. I love hearing just how things get born, how they get run. You know, it's been awesome watching you grow too. We've kind of gone almost at the same, Like we kind of grown together into these different things. And, you know, the conversations are not that different now than they were 10 years ago, right? We're both scared and don't know what we're doing and love what we're doing. And now we have more expertise and more people and have learned, for me, I've learned to lean on others a lot more because what I think was what slowed us down in our growth in the beginning was the thought that I needed to do everything. And you just can't. I mean, like you said before, winning is a team sport.
Yeah.
We'll never get to the places in our companies that they are now without all people. The people that have come around us.
And that is the toughest thing as an entrepreneur to do because, you know, trust is involved in that and you're forming a relationship. And that's something that you have to keep, you know, the focus on, because if you're so worried about the small thing, and that's always been a struggle for me, especially with employees and growing and putting managers in place, and hiring managers in, is letting go and let things happen and give people the room to mess up and learn on their own, even though you know things should be done differently. Or because there's a lot of times that I do. I mean, there's a lot of times where I stand back and I don't want to say I watch the plane fly into the mountain, but
it's going to clip some trees though.
Yeah. I see what's going to happen, but it's good to have people go through their processes and be accountable and to see, to make sure that they have that accountability back you to back the company and themselves, because, you know, that's where accountability comes in for the most part. You know, it's, really have invested people. And once
you're telling them how to do everything versus them learning on their own, I mean, how much more
you can't
have a respect for their process once they see what they've done, made the mistake, and then learned from it. The same way that we've all made mistakes and learned too.
Right. And then as an entrepreneur starting your business, that's your next hardest goal is firing your first fire. You know, it's a whole other process of somebody who started with you. Because now you're in the realm of, now you're a business owner, right? And we talked a little bit before about the prettiest girl at the prom a little bit. You know, it's no different than there's a lot of talent out there that can bring things to the table. It's no different than when you meet a person and you want to always be growing and giving those opportunities, not only to yourself, but to the company and bringing them to the next level. And we've been really lucky here, like people are just stepping up and we barely have a change over here. I mean, it's we have a kind of a saying that, you know, we're pretty quick to fire, but we're real slow to hire. Really vet people and kind of make sure that it's the right fit. And that's the hardest part, I would say, to any entrepreneur as you start to grow, because you need to look at protecting what you're building and setting yourself up for the long haul for what's the next step, because you can get blinded a lot. I know I did in the beginning. I did not like letting people, you know, I was micromanaging, and I still have tendencies to do it here and there, but I've probably, you know, tenfold a lot better at letting go and watching people what they do and run with things. But you have to pull yourself back as a business owner because you have a job to do. If you're getting involved in like you know, like you guys do with, you know, the minuscule things, as far as there's so many things that happens in your business to having a closing come to fruition. And if you're so involved in that and not looking at, because your job as an owner is what's coming next after that, right?
Right.
Your employees got to be looking at what's in front of, or what's on the plate, handling it, taking it to fruition. But you as an owner, once the meal is done, there's the next meal is, you know, 3-4 hours away. You got to be preparing for that, because that's what sustains it.
And it's better for the employees too. I mean, you could be looking down and in or up and out. And as an owner, we got to be looking up and out. If we're looking down and in on the day-to-day and what's happening, then when the next hurdle comes, and you know, we're going to get blindsided a couple steps ahead. And that's bad for me. That's bad for you as the employee too. So implementing that ownership of everybody doing what they're supposed to be doing and being held accountable for it, to that gives you the trust that they're doing it, so that you can go look up and out to make sure that the next thing and the next thing and the next thing are taken care of. That's where a team really gels. And it sounds like you've created a great culture of doing that by hiring slow, hiring for character, training for skills, and just having the right people around you. I mean, it can't be overstated. The people that come along will either kill your business or will take you to the next level. A rising tide raises all ships. And you know, we have amazing people that have done some incredible things in our company. And in hindsight, we've had some people that didn't, right? That were more of an anchor than a rising tide. And being able to recognize those things and being able to recognize how you contribute to that as a leader, right? I mean, the people that were the wrong fit in my business were 100% my fault, because I didn't take the time or didn't have my core values written out and said, hey, these are what we're about. So there's ways to grow through that too. And you learn and you stub your toe and you kind of continue to grow through it.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's been amazing to watch where you guys have grown. I really appreciate you taking the time to spend the story. So if you're listening to this right now and saying, well, I don't really know how this relates to Free From Wall Street, it's not about always investing, right? It's about different mindsets of how to take control of your life. And entrepreneurs, I think, do that to the extreme level. I think a lot of people think that entrepreneurs are very risky. And we are with our own personal finances, but entrepreneurs in general are really risk averse, right? We're very, really,
you're avoiding risk
mistakes. Yeah, we're trying to avoid risk as much as the next person. But we also think that risk is working for somebody else sometimes. We also think that risk is not being able to utilize our energy and talent in the way that we know that we were created to. So Free From Wall Street is kind of the mindset about investing and getting free of your financial future. And you've certainly done that, right? You've gone from digging trenches, and Travis too. I mean, I remember going to sign our first contract. I had to bring it to a job site that you guys were running. He signed it on the track of an excavator.
Yeah. And Travis was working for me at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so digging ditches to buying $10 million buildings and to, you know, working for townships all over the tri-state. And, you know,
and Travis is a great example too, because he, at that time, I was making that transition to buy NAP, and I begged him to stay. And I remember, you know, him coming in my office, and I know it was hard for him to tell me, because I see what you see in Travis. Like, it wasn't about that vision. Hey, I need a guy out in the field. It's just that I know what he brings to the table. And I'm so glad that he knew enough to know that that's not what he wanted, you know, and we kind of talk about it here and there. You know, I'm just so glad that things went the way they did. And I always believe in things happen for a reason. He met you for a reason, and, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
I remember the conversation. Yeah. I remember him going in to talk to you. He was like, I got to go talk to Tommy today. You know, we've made our decision as to what we're going to do with the business. We're going to start one. We're going to what that's going to look like and what the timeframes are. We don't know yet, but yeah, it was, you know, all I remember is how gracious you were about it, going, yeah, man, go get it. And, you know, it was a lot of your encouragement that launched us off into, hey, let's go do this. And it was great, because at the same time you were doing the same thing. You're like, hey, I'm going to take this big leap. I understand why you want to do what you're going to do, man. I would like to have you along for the journey, but it's, man, it's been incredible. And it's been great getting to know you through the years, and, you know, love masterminding with you and talking about all these different things, because it jazzes us all up, right? We get even more pumped when we see people going out and crushing it. So thanks for being on the show, man. We will definitely catch up soon. And thanks everybody for listening to the Free From Wall Street podcast. If you have not done so yet, go to freefromwallstreet.com and get the 5 things your financial advisor does not want you to know. And it's a good little free booklet that we're going to give you about how to avoid some pitfalls of Wall Street. So freefromwallstreet.com. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Like what you hear? Be sure to subscribe and head over to freefromwallstreet.com and sign up for our free guides to help you and your family invest with purpose.